and welcome back to the Go Home Show podcast. My name is Will Brazier, and this is your one-stop shop for all things professional wrestling with weekly chats with WWE stars, all the news you might have missed from the previous 7 days, and a look back at some of the most infamous moments in history. Speaking of infamous, I'm with two infamous WWE fans. Elliot Ames, how are you?
Not too bad, brother. Very, very good this morning.
The beast among this podcast, the man that could break me in half with his two hands, and probably has thought about doing it. It's Michael Henson. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Will.
And just before we start, you may notice if you're watching the video, Chris Anderson isn't here. He's on his way to retribution training. He's got his balaclava and his joggers in his bag, and he's learning how to be a bad heel. And you might see him on a Raw or SmackDown coming soon. But lots to digest, gentlemen. We've coming off the back of two pay-per-views in 2 weeks, 60-minute man Iron Man match. So let's start with none of that and go to Brock Lesnar, potentially, apparently, in the old dirt sheets, as a free agent, Edo.
Yeah, apparently the news kind of broke over, I think it was over the weekend, that arguably the biggest attraction in WWE in terms of bankable stars at the moment is now a free agent, as he's ran out his current deal, which is quite a shocker to the system, because if there's one thing people know about Brock Lesnar, is that he gets paid a lot of money working with the WWE. And it's probably the reason why he's been in the main event scene for, what, the past 5-6 years? There hasn't really been a time I can think of where, apart from that one Mania where he faced Dean Ambrose, he seems to always be in the main event for the top title. So for him to have gone away looks potentially bad, but from what I'm hearing, again, all of this is still kind of speculation, is that he's just ran out his deal, and basically he's like, when he wants to wrestle, he'll come back, or when Vince wants him into storyline, they'll write him in and then they'll meet a deal. Brock will make an absolute shit ton of money and everyone's happy because Brock makes money for the company. Yeah. So that's the way it's looking, but it's still a shocking bit of news regardless.
It's the wrestling version of Lionel Messi at the moment. That's the big story of football.
Yeah, and look, you can tell Mick's on holiday and you can tell the rest and the relaxation is coming in, because that is a beautiful analogy.
He can't cross the border too because he lives in Canada and the border's supposedly closed. That's what I read on Twitter as well. So that might be an issue at the moment, because I think he lives like in a remote part of Canada on his farm. So maybe that could be an issue too.
Well, one of the things as well I saw as well is, just to point out as well, I don't know about you guys, but I sort of feel like we were getting a new era of Brock Lesnar. I was watching back the Royal Rumble from this year, and like, that is one of the best bookings I've ever seen. And like when Keith Lee comes in and he's like, who's this big motherfucker? And he's like dancing around. I just feel like he was really just getting, I don't know, he just not dropped his ego, but I don't know, he just felt a bit different, Crush.
He seemed to be enjoying it a lot more. Like, look, when he was Money in the Bank, holding Money in the Bank, and he was coming down with it on his shoulder, he's dancing, listening to it.
Yeah,
he seems to be enjoying it a lot more. Maybe that's something to do with age. Maybe he's he doesn't need to be that serious person, because he can have a joke, but at the same time, like we saw when he won the title on the first SmackDown on Fox, he can destroy someone within seconds. So like, he's just probably enjoying himself. He's pretty much completed life. He's done everything he wanted to. There's talk of him fighting John Jones now in the UFC. But yeah, the door is always going to be open for Brock in WWE, because he's a draw. He brings fans in. He brings money in.
Well, let's just finally on that, I'll get you the views from both of you. At the start of next year, will he be in WWE, AEW or UFC, or on his farm? E-Dog?
I would say he's going to be in the WWE.
To be honest, I think he'll still be relaxing, doing what he wants to do. Probably being around WrestleMania time, because hopefully by next April, when it goes to LA, fans will be allowed back in the stadium. So, bit Brock comeback match, even like a surprise appearance, the roof's going to blow off. Like, I remember when, again, I was at WrestleMania 33, and he had taken on Goldberg. He was absolutely loving it. Like, the crowd were so absorbed into him. And when he won the title, like, it's the first time I've properly seen him smile, because the fans were loving him, and obviously some people didn't enjoy the Goldberg run in 2017. And can't wait to see him back.
Hashtag thank you, Brock. Speaking of one inside attraction, one outside attraction that might be making his way in is Tyson Fury. Mick, Yeah, he's fought in Saudi. I thought he put on a good show, but he's calling out Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, it's been a series of Twitter videos, haven't there? Obviously, Tyson loves a call out on Instagram and Twitter with his sort of selfie mode. As we've seen with Wilder in the past and whoever else he wants to call out. But yeah, this is a nice little angle. I think he's still signed to WWE for part-time appearances. I'm not too sure. Obviously, at the Saudi match. And then when we went to Raw and SmackDown, Will, he appeared then.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. The new tag team with Braun Strowman.
Against the B team.
For me, Crush, I don't know about you, but that for me, it was one of the greatest matches I've ever seen.
Yeah, but again, he's not as big as Brock. But he brings the interest that Brock does because he's built up that massive audience in boxing. It's an easy combination, boxing and wrestling. There's both fans are very passionate and it's a deal that will work well for both sides. I'd love to see Tyson back in WWE.
E-Dog, the thing that's getting me excited about this, is this mean that potentially it could lead to a UK pay-per-view?
Ooh, that would be something pretty special. Imagine if it was like one of the big four as well, you know, going forward. That would be pretty fantastic because that's a headline bout right there. The only thing that I had a little bit of skepticism for all this, I think this is just Tyson kind of, you know, basically trying to boost his social numbers up for a little bit, is purely because he's meant to be fighting Joshua. Am I right in thinking next? Or is he facing Wilder?
No, he's got a face Wilder than it's Joshua. But Joshua doesn't want him to fight Wilder, he wants him to fight him. It's very complicated.
Right, okay. Either way, the only way that this potential feud still works is as it did when he faced Braun, is if he hasn't lost a fight yet. And that's the only problem with this. And obviously with everything with travel bans and the fact that we aren't going to get fans into stadiums and everything. If this was a normal year and we could have this booked for, say, Survivor Series and everything, we could get it done and out of the way before the end of the year so that it's still a hot prospect of this undefeated fighter going against the WWE champion. However, if he does end up losing, and then we're still kind of maybe teasing this idea, loses a little bit of its mystique. And that's my only concern going into it. Because I still want to see it. He's a great promo. He knows how to light up a crowd. I thought it was fantastic when he turned up in Manchester and started that big brawl and everything. I think he's got good potential to have a decent career as like one of those special one-off WWE guests.
Obviously, Fury beat Braun Strowman because they're not going to get him to win. But if Drew's still the champion and he faces Fury, Fury's not going to lose.
I feel like with Fury, though, it's more about the payday and the acclaim and like the championship and the reputation, maybe second nature to him.
I mean, he's still quite young as well, isn't he, though? I think he's only...
Yeah, he's my age,
32.
I think.
Yeah.
He's had a hard paper round, but
yeah, he just turned 32 in August.
You're not my age, I'm 29, just to put that on the record. 30-ish next year. Anyway, by the by, we spoke about the champion on Raw, but let's go to SmackDown because we've had two champions in 2 weeks. And this one, Michael, is Roman Reigns.
I'm happy to see Roman being champion because it's not the old Roman that's champion. It's this new...
I was gonna say, you're happy to see Roman as heel, aren't you?
Yeah, obviously me and Chris were in the Thunder when it happened, and when he's...
look at that, you're trying to insert yourself. I was at WrestleMania 33, Thunderdome. What was the Thunderdome like? Were you there? But no, I was there, mate. You don't have to...
I was on camera, mate. I was unfortunately on the screenshot that went viral because there was a sign that was shown. But yeah, when the match ended, everyone's like, cheer for Bray Wyatt, and then like the director in the ear, and then all of a sudden Roman's there. Everyone's like, whoa. Like, you can imagine the crowd pop that would have got. And then forward on to Payback, or was it SmackDown, before Payback, and they come to get him signed the contract, and he's like, oh, what do you think? And it pans to Paul Heyman. Like, that's just money. Paul Heyman equals money. Like, he is the best person to have as an advocate, not a manager, as he corrected someone the other day on Twitter. But yeah, heel Roman with Paul Heyman is just money. It's gold. And it also... signals that probably Brock won't be back for a while, which could eventually lead to Brock versus Roman at WrestleMania next year and a sort of a face Brock Lesnar.
Hey, Doug, where do you see, I know it's got a big and broad question, but where do you see this going, Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns? Is it going into a faction or is it just going to be Roman Reigns sort of Summer of Punk-esque domination?
I'm kind of hoping it's more the latter, more of a Summer of Punk sort of thing. I think the thing that makes Paul Heyman work so well when he's with his clients is that he doesn't need anybody else. He can sell the fights, and most of the time, the people he's selling are absolute badasses, you know, that don't need any extra help and attention. The fact that Roman, the way that he won the title, because I haven't seen a lot of really people talking about more so to the fact that, oh yeah, he's won the title. The fact that he didn't turn up till really late into the match, almost it's very reminiscent of the Heist of the Century in a way. Like, he waited for the two guys to beat each other up, and they're already tired from the previous week, you know, in storyline and everything, because they battered each other. And then he took his opportunity and then took the belt. Regular Roman wouldn't do that. He's being smarter. He's being more conniving. It's almost like Heyman's like telling him tips and ideas and giving him like a little bit more influence. I think that's a much better storyline for me than Roman all of a sudden having some other gang of dweebs who want to be his little dogs to the big dog. I don't think that works for Roman. I think he looks a legitimate badass. He doesn't really need to be around other people. I mean, I'm hoping he isn't the dude who's linked with being the leader of Retribution. I mean, he could make it work, but as I say, I think that's just a bit too much story going on, too many elements that would, I think, just make it confusing. Sticking with Heyman, have him beat the crap out of everybody, hold the belt till Mania, where probably Brock, I assume, will come back and then beat Roman, and then we can start this cycle again. And that'll be a good run.
Credit to The Fiend and Strowman breaking the ring. It's a very good spot every single time. Charles Robinson sold it extremely well.
Say, yeah, credit to Charles Robinson. It was like Hollywood movie out of the ring there. I was worried for him. Well, that was a triple threat match that we were talking about. There was a fatal four-way Tuesday night on NXT. 60 minutes of pure, hard, unadulterated action, which has obviously left us with a tie. E-Dog, what did you make of it? Some fantastic spots, and we've got another match on the back of it.
Yeah, I thought that the match was thoroughly entertaining. I mean, what do you expect when you've got those four guys in the ring? As I mentioned the other week, it's the Mount Rushmore of NXT. So many great moments over the years, and all four of them have such amazing chemistry together, as we've seen throughout the years. And the way it ended was absolutely fantastic. The fact that Finn Balor got that pin, got that last fall in your mind. There's 12 seconds left, and you think, all right, this is it. He's the champion, only for Adam Cole to spoil the fun and bring it to a tie. If there's one thing I like in my Iron Man matches, it is last-second ties or last-second almost ties. Similar to like when, I think it was it Lesnar versus Angle on SmackDown? You got like close to getting the... It was, wasn't it? He was like so close to getting that last fall to tie it up. Whenever you do that in an Iron Man match, which I'm sure if we look back at Iron Man matches, they probably do that with most of them.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was so close, he's trying to push Balor over, and Adam Cole just looks like a little kid trying to push a big ball, you know? He's just really, really struggling. But he gets it, pins him, 1, 2, 3, and Super Tuesday 2 goes along, and we're going to get an absolutely phenomenal match. And the only thing that annoys me is it could potentially lead to Chris's prediction from a few weeks ago potentially coming to pass, which we all kind of, we like the theory, and you got obviously Keith Lee going on the main roster. We got everything else wrong. He might be right, just a few weeks off.
Mate, what do you make of that? Do we think we're edging closer to what for this podcast would be a horrible situation where Chris Anderson would be right?
Yeah, I mean, that is like the least favourite thing in the world, that Chris Anderson proved to be right. I mean, it's plausible. When he mentioned it, I was like, well, that could actually happen. And as Elliot says, it might be a few weeks out. But it's a tough one to call, because obviously Adam Cole's the longest reigning champ in NXT history.
Mm-hmm.
But then Finn Balor has the experience on the main roster. He won the Universal title, obviously, injured his shoulder. I like them part in the match when they both two-sweeted each other in the middle of the ring, and then Finn obviously chucked him out and then jumped on him. But yeah, it was a very good match. As Elliot mentioned before, WWE loves late Iron Man match action. Like, just look at NXT TakeOver Respect when Bayley won it, like, literally on the dot. That was amazing. Probably one of the best women's match ever. But then now, I saw a lot of tweets about the count started on 2 seconds to go and then get him a free count. So that was funny to read on the Wednesday morning. Yeah, Wednesday morning it would have been, saying that 2 seconds, he shouldn't have got the free count, but obviously it's down to how fast the ref counts. It's like back on the wrestling games when you used to be like, if you're a special guest on your career mode, you can like tap it really quick and it just go 1, 2, 3 straight away.
Just quickly, just to wrap up that, Elliot, one word, who would be champion next Tuesday?
Finn.
Crush.
Cole.
I'll go Finn. Finally, just to wrap up the news from this week, there's so much that we could have talked about as well, but after a monumental win, Keith Lee against Randy Orton, but then Randy Orton came back, won the triple threat match after the using Keith Lee's spirit bomb on Seth Rollins to get the pin, but it's McIntyre versus Randy Orton at the next pay-per-view, E-Dog. I mean, just break it down for me.
Well, it was a very interesting little section on Raw, bringing all these number one contenders matches, kind of a mini tournament to determine it. I'm always a big fan of these. The fact that all of them seem to have an ongoing storyline going through them, apart from Keith Lee and Ziggler, even though Keith Lee won, and won very convincingly. You had Seth versus Dominic in them bringing up their rivalry, obviously, that's been going on for the past few months, and he won very convincingly. Apparently Rey Mysterio has an injury, and that's the reason why he was just looking on backstage and didn't actually go out and help his son from getting the crap beat out of him, but hey-ho. And then we obviously got to Randy Orton beating Kevin Owens, but Aleister Black came out looking in his best ever Escape from New York cosplay, looking absolutely fantastic, beating the crap out of Kevin Owens before the match.
Yeah,
and it ended up having, as you say, a really great finish. I like the fact that Keith didn't get pinned. I don't think it hurts Seth. I don't think it's a bad thing that Randy's in this feud. It was kind of weird how they kind of put Keith to get that victory over Randy at Payback anyway, because I'd have been very happy for them to have a rematch this past Sunday anyway, because I feel the feud has still got a lot more legs going into it. However, it built up one star, didn't lose anything really for Randy. And Randy, when he's in a good feud, and he's really going through with it, and he's really into his character and his motivation, he's one of the best in the world. He's, you know, brought up a little bit of that Legend Killer vibe. He's not quite there yet. You know, nothing will ever beat original Legend Killer Randy Orton for me. I mean, unless he starts playing what's that song called again? Burning My Light, is it? His original theme after he left Evolution. Until he plays that, it's never going to work for me. But he's working some really great stuff with Drew, some really great matches. The fact that it was a backwards roll-up, wasn't it? At SummerSlam, yeah. That won him it out of nowhere. So the momentum's still there. I still think they could go a little long way.
Yeah.
So I still think Randy's going to eventually win the belt. So, yeah, I think it's going pretty well.
Well, E-Dog, you did mention Evolution there, and that brings me to the perfect point to move on to our next section of the show called Convince Me. This week I saw a bloody great tweet. I can't find it, so apologies to the person that did have this creativity. But it's a fantastic fantasy booking question. So here it is, gentlemen. If Evolution were to reform, Triple H as Ric Flair, Orton as Triple H, which I don't think is out of the question, which two other younger superstars deserve the rub of the green? We'll go round the table, which we're not sat at, in a clockwise manner, which you don't know because you can't see my Zoom screen. So, Michael, what is your first name to Evolution and why?
So, if you look at the original Evolution, you had Ric Flair, Triple H, and then you had Batista, Randy Orton. Randy Orton was the sort of the younger, the cocky, arrogant, sort of upcoming superstar that's... Yep. Ready to make a big challenge on the stage, and you have Batista, who's the enforcer, pretty much.
Yep.
So, Triple H is a big fan of both
Ryback.
Of these wrestlers.
You're going for Ryback.
I'm not going for Ryback.
Okay.
My two is Ricochet and Pete Dunne.
Wow.
Ooh.
Tell me why.
Well, Triple H is a huge fan of both alone. Like, he spoke so highly about Pete Dunne during his NXT UK title reign. Obviously, he's been used heavily on NXT before the pandemic.
Yep.
And Ricochet, he's obviously another big fan. Like, I remember Ricochet's first match, he did a running flip off the top rope within like 2 minutes of the match.
Yeah.
At one of the takeovers. So I want them to be in this new Evolution, because one, Pete Dunne is one of the toughest people I've ever seen wrestle. Like, some of his strikes are just incredible. We've seen how much a bigger pop he can get over in America, how good he was in NXT. So everyone's been saying he's done the main roster for a long time. Now this would be his chance to move up and be that enforcer, the Batista type role. Hopefully we'll do the thumbs up, thumb down at some point. But then moving into Ricochet, obviously he's been used a bit at the start. Then obviously he's played a big part in Brock Lesnar getting knocked out of the Royal Rumble by Drew McIntyre with a low blow, which obviously that part part of their storyline. But then since then, he's not really done much. I know he's on main event this week against Mustafa Ali. I know Mustafa tweeted his frustrations. So yeah, that would be his chance to be sort of the high flyer of the group. We didn't really have one back in the day, but changing the makeup evolution, this is the high flyer. He becomes this arrogant, thinks he deserves the world, but he does because he's one of the best high flyers in the world at this moment in time. So that'll be my choices.
E-Dog, I'm going to slide in the middle here just because of one thing that Michael said. So my new evolution would include Mustafa Ali, that sort of like, you know, hybrid, you know, the Ricochet role, which we could call it. Obviously not being used to the best of his abilities, but we have seen his abilities. There was sort of the teasing of the hacker storyline, which we never saw. So he does need some depth to the character to add to the amazing costume and the amazing moves and the amazing character that he is. So that's mine. And then I think if there was a sting here, it would be called the curveball of the week. The one that's going to beat the shit out of everyone, and it is Rhea Ripley. Now, if you're watching the video podcast, I've never seen two gentlemen. They normally rip the shit out of me, but there was a nod of agreement there. Rhea Ripley to be that badass. Obviously, she's flirted with the main roster so far with the appearance on Raw when she was feuding with Charlotte, but she's still not made that main roster debut, which many would say she might not need to do if she's on NXT. But to do it and be and sort of, you know, carry on the momentum of the women's division and to be paired with Triple H and Randy Orton. It was just, you know, just a little curveball I thought I'd throw you away and see if you wanted to have a go on it.
Oh, it's a solid idea. Like, when you suggested it in the pre-podcast meeting, I thought you meant it would just keep it to male superstars. But yeah, Rhea Ripley. Like, we've seen a lot of sort of crossover recently. Obviously, the most obvious one is Nia Jax's Royal Rumble.
Yep.
When she got RKO'd, and I've never seen a crowd light up so much. And obviously, back in the day, plenty of female wrestlers were used in matches. Like, look at Stacy Keibler; she got an RKO.
I just think it brings up the women's division as well, just to give it that more sort of prominence as well. But I think we've started well. Elliot, who are you going for?
Well, I mean, I have to say you two have given some really good curveballs. Crush going for the NXT ilk, and you obviously going for Rhea Ripley. Mine's a little bit more, I guess, kind of generic, a bit more mainstream. They're two somewhat established stars, but I feel if they were in a faction like this, they would flourish under the guidance and inspiration of Triple H and Randy Orton. As you mentioned before, Crush, you need an enforcer type. You need a strong character, someone who's going to present a real physical threat. I don't think there's anyone really on the roster that doesn't impose that more than the Swiss superstar Cesaro. I would very much like to see him involved in this. And with Randy Orton, who's kind of seen, in hindsight, he was kind of viewed as like the young up-and-comer, the young buck who's ready to prove himself against the land of the big dogs and all that sort of stuff. But for me, I always view him as the guy who was willing to take crazy stunts, willing to put his body on the line and willing to do more insane stuff than the rest of them because he was still willing to prove that he was part of this fold and that he's going to be the future of the company. Or probably the best person who takes stunts in WWE. We saw it at WrestleMania against Seth Rollins, the man, the myth, the legend, Kevin Owens. And the other reason why I've gone with that is because if we cast back just a few years ago, when Kevin Owens won the Universal title, who was the man who saved the day? Triple H. I think that's perfect, simple storytelling of, especially the fact that Kevin hasn't had the Universal title or WWE title since. It's a really easy storyline to work in. Like, if you want to win the championship, you've got to align with me. I think that works really well. I think that's going to be great storytelling. So yeah. That's my two picks, Cesaro and Kevin Owens.
Love that. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching on YouTube, get yourself in the comments, which two superstars would you like to join a reformed evolution? Or just get, you know, get at us on Twitter. If you like it, you love it. And if you don't like it, maybe just keep your opinion to yourself. Right, Night of Champions is around the corner, and that'll be live from the Amway Centre in Orlando. And how better to enjoy watching along than with the company of some fresh and delicious beers from all over the globe. In this crazy English weather, there's no need to worry about heading to the shops to stock up. Beer 52 will bring the beer to you. They're offering a free case of 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best brewers on the planet. all you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/thegohomeshow and cover just the $5.99 for postage. Each case is delivered directly to your doorstep, so no need to leave the house. Looking to stock up? Now is your chance. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club with over 150,000 members that they send a brand new case to every month. Each month, cases has a different theme. Past themes have included beer from New Zealand, South Africa, Korea, and all over the USA and Europe. So that's beer52.com. That's the word beer, then the numbers 52.com/thegohomeshow for free bloody beers.
And welcome back to this week's Wrestling Room 101. Now, we're changing things up a little bit differently, where I'm having to convince both Will and Michael with my own personal segment. If you're new to Room 101, basically every week a different member of the panel will bring with them one thing from the wrestling world that they like to get rid of forever. And I'm going to present it to the group. And if it enters Room 101, that is it. It's gone forever. However, if it isn't, basically means you have to keep your mouth shut for the next week because you are banned from bringing anything forward for the following week and having any input on the decision the rest of the panel makes. This week, I'm going with a pretty topical, very niche little subject in wrestling. And for me, it's when tag teams are broken up after the result of tag teams break up stipulation matches. We saw it this past week with the Iconics losing to the Riot Squad, I believe it was, on Monday Night Raw. And for me, that's just a really, that's a damp squib of a way for a tag team to break up. I personally prefer the whole, we saw it with, you know, the classic is obviously the Rockers with Jannetty and Michaels, the whole barbershop super kick and all that sort of stuff. It's a very simple, you know, cliche in wrestling, but it works every single time because it builds those two wrestlers as single stars afterwards. They'll end up having a feud that's based on actual personal hatred of each other, because normally these things start with a little bit of jealousy, a little bit of feeling like I can't move past with this person, they're dragging me down. Just going through and doing a tag match and it's like, oh, you broke up now. It just feels like a bit of wasted potential. I don't know if it's just because they don't have faith in certain wrestlers moving on to singles competition after being tag team wrestlers. However, give it a go at the end of the day. What's the worst that can happen? Happened with Shawn Michaels. He arguably became one of the best superstars of all time. He was just a tag team guy before that happened. You got to take those risks. So that's why I'd want to see tag teams not breaking up through jealousy and infighting going into Room 101.
I think you make some great points, Elliot, but the fact that you talk about it becoming a wrestling cliche, I think is sort of to the detriment of your argument, because to every Shawn Michaels, there's a Marty Jannetty. Do you know what I mean? To every tag team breakup, there's a winner and there's a loser. Shawn Michaels obviously going on to do everything that he did, but then Marty Jannetty, well, I've been on his Facebook page over the last 6 months and, you know, maybe that's not prime time reading. But I think this almost allows one, an iconic sort of return. And also it means there's not a winner or a loser from the feud. So especially for that women's division, they're going out there as two strong female competitors that could maybe get booked for the belt. I'm trying to think, I mean, there have been some examples where that's not worked, to counter my argument and stick up for you. I mean, when the Dudleys got broken up and Devon went to be a reverend and Bubba just carried on being Bubba, I mean, that wasn't the break. But I think now, like you said, it is becoming a cliche. I'm not mad at the clean break. What about you, Mick?
I'm very indifferent, because the Iconics were a great team together. Like, they bounced off each other so well. Like, you just have to look at, like, especially the backstage segments that they've done. Yeah. Like, I always remember the Billy Kay one. Did you study journalism for that? Yeah. The high-pitched Australian accent. Like, they were very good at being wrestlers, but also then being a comedy duo as well. So I'm kind of disappointed to see them break up. Obviously, if it's for Peyton's push, we'll just see what they do with Billy Kay. Obviously, I know you mentioned as well before about being written off because of the Raw Underground stuff where Peyton threw into two of the four horsewomen in NXT. But then again, like Elliot said, we know Shawn Michaels if the Rockers didn't break up. So I'm very much on the fence.
Well, to be fair, to even that argument, we wouldn't have had Shawn Michaels about the breakup. So, Mick, where do you stand?
No, it's hard because there's so many examples of good and bad.
To be fair, the good, I think the, overall the good does outweigh the bad because, one, we wouldn't have had Shawn Michaels. So, that I mean, that in its own could be Elliot safe and into Room 101. So, I'm happy
On the flip side of that, though, like, you look at how long has New Day been around for now? Like, what, 7 years? 6-7 years?
If Kofi's been champion.
Yeah, exactly. But we didn't need to break the group up.
We haven't broke the group. Oh, sorry. Yes, yeah, so, got you.
They've stayed together throughout all thick and thin and are still one of the most...
But the point I think Elliot's saying is group shouldn't be broken up on a whim with no storyline.
Yeah.
All right.
Which I will agree with, if you will, Michael. I've put my hand out halfway.
Because it's Elliot, yes.
If you're willing to shake. Yeah, if it's Chris Anderson, I wouldn't have put it in.
If it's Chris, mate, you're wrong.
So, Elliot, well done. I believe you're exempt from next week. You might be on the judging panel. But tag teams breaking up on a whim with no storyline, has no place in wrestling, and that is in Room 101. But do you agree with Elliot? Do you think the points that we've made were good, or are we just chatting guff? Let us know in the comments down below. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the quiz. And obviously, last week I won. So, as it stands, I've got a belt around my waist and nothing else. Put that as a mental picture in your head. We have just come off the back of a 60-minute Man Iron Man match on NXT, which saw an indecisive result. But that led me to think, what Iron Man matches have we had in the past? So, I've gone to, and let me just reiterate, I'm on Wikipedia as my source. So, I'm sure if there's any that have been missed out, please let me know. There have been 32 wrestlers, according to Wikipedia, in the history of WWE that have fought in Iron Man matches. So I want you to tell, and let me tell you, there's some elite Mount Rushmore names on this and some people you will not believe. And if you get one of them, I'm willing to be your slave for the day because there's no way you'll get this first. But Crush, how many out of the 32 names do you think you can get?
I'll start fairly easy, 10.
Okay, 10?
I will say, I'd say 11.
Michael? I'll go 12.
You said 12, didn't you, Crush? Yeah, I'll say 13. 32, no.
Michael?
14.
Elliot?
Don't think I can do 14.
14 names?
Uh-huh.
You sure, Elliot? You can't push him anymore?
Nah, I don't think I could.
Okay, he's sticking. Michael, to take the belt from me and to become go-home show quiz champion, you need to name 14 people that have been in Iron matches in 60 seconds.
Okay.
Which will start in 3, 2, 1, go.
Finn Balor, Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano, Adam Cole, Sasha Banks, Bayley, Charlotte, Cesaro, Sheamus, Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy, The Rock, Brock Lesnar, Kurt Angle.
14. Well done, Michael. You've done it. Congratulations. I didn't factor in female wrestlers, but you can, of course, have those. Do you want to know the list?
Go for it.
Yes.
The only reason I wanted to do this was for the list, just to see your reaction on one name on here that absolutely blew me away. So, Chris Benoit, Bret Hart, Brock Lesnar, Joey Mercury, John Cena, Kevin Owens, Cesaro, Sheamus, Dolph Ziggler, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, John Morrison, Ric Flair, Owen Hart, The Rock, Charlie Haas, Hardcore Holly, The Miz, Shannon Moore, Randy Orton, AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Tommaso Ciampa, Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano, Kurt Angle, Bayley, Charlotte Flair, Sasha Banks. And the one name that I have missed out is, of course, everybody's favourite, Jimmy Wang Yang.
That's That must be a long, long time ago.
If you'd have got that, I'd have fell off my chair.
Does it say who he was facing in that Iron Man match?
No, but I imagine it'll be Shannon Moore or Charlie Haas.
It has to be one of them. Charlie Haas was like the biggest shocker until you said Jimmy Wang Yang for me.
Jimmy Wang Yang.
I'd call Holly in there as well. I remember I think it was the first ever wrestling event I went to. I entered a competition with the paper to get two tickets to Manchester. Me and my dad went, had this like It was like an extra large shirt, so it absolutely buried me. I must have been like 8. And I remember Rob Van Dam came out and I was going mad, but then I was worried about the people behind him. I was like, nah, I just go mad, because I weren't as tall as I am now. But then my one memory from it, apart from that, is Hardcore Holly was in a street fight and he brought out a cricket bat under the ring and everyone went mad.
Nice. What was it? Slazenger V100? Or can you remember?
Probably, yeah. Probably something like that, yeah.
Great bat, hits hard. Right, Chris, you are the champion. So the it's been bestowed upon you to come up with next week's quiz. And I'm sure you do a fantastic job. Gents, this week I was very, very lucky to sit down with Drake Maverick. Obviously, he's had ups and downs, trials and tribulations over the last few months, but he's back in NXT. We got into that. But I started the interview by chatting about the M42 Hopwood Services, which we had a great debate around. And here's that chat now. How's things? You all well?
I'm well.
You're out in Florida, I take it, yeah?
Yes, we are, Orlando, yeah. So, the weather's always good, but, Seeing it is a rarity at the moment, but you know.
Oh, just where are you from originally?
Birmingham.
Oh, I'm from Worcester originally.
Oh, not M5.
Yeah, it's probably off the service stations. Right.
I was just trying to remember what service station it was between Birmingham and Worcester. That's really sad.
Hopwood Services, if it ever comes up in a quiz question. There you go, man. Something you never thought you'd talk about today. Right, let's get into the actual stuff that's very interesting. Your amazing career, what a bloody up and down year it's been. And obviously I wanted to start at the one of the maybe lower points of the year, which you've turned into a positive, but the video that you put out when you heard about your release. When you put it out there and you saw the reaction, like, what was your sort of first impression of it all?
I didn't see the reaction for hours. I literally did it and put my phone down and went for a walk. Just went for a walk. It was, I think I went around my friend's house for a cup of tea, who's also English in the neighborhood. I went for a walk to his house, had a cup of tea, walked around the lake by mine, come back. And then I was like, oh, this went nuts. Cause there was a lot of people getting in touch at the time. And it was, just a real whirlwind day, a very strange day. And, all I remember is at the time, thinking, oh, because I got off the phone with Mark Carano, and like I just remember him saying that like they still want you to do that tournament thing if you want to do it. And I'm like, yeah. And he said, look, if you do well in this, things might work out for you. I'm like, okay, what have I got? 3 matches. Okay. And then I had the NXT guys were doing a documentary on me already about the me from general manager going to be in the cruiserweight tournament as like a, coming from general manager into my first time as an active competitor in the ring. And they were documenting that. So I called them. I go, hey man, I've just been fired. What's good? And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, but they still want me to do the tournament. Why don't we, this has landed in our laps that what's happening. This is real life. Let's just take the documentary that way. And they're like, okay, cool. And then I said to him, like, give me 1 second, I'm going to do something. And I just sat there and just talked. Because I'd already put a video out, I think the week before, explaining why as the general manager, I'm now competing in the Cruiserweight title tournament. And then I just did the exact same thing again. And, there we are. And it all came out. It just... as soon as I sat down, it could have been a good old wrestling promo, but I was like, nah, I'm just going to say how I feel, to be honest. I'm just going to say how I feel. And, my job as a WWE superstar is to get the most amount of eyes on what we do and get people interested in what we do. And this is what's happening in my real life, everybody. You can come on the ride with me if you want, see what happens, or you can watch from afar. You can check out YouTube the next day. I really don't mind. But like right now, this is me. This is what I'm going through. And I'm going to get through this because that's what I've always done. And that's what I've always taught myself to do. And that's, there's a lot of obstacles when you want to get into the big man's business, when you're 5'4" tall from Birmingham, England, trust me. So it was just another, it was another long chapter in a really big book. It's a real big book of just, no, Just, I'm like Daniel Bryan had a book out called Yes. I think I might call mine No. just try and get around it, you know. But yeah, it's a really weird day, and you know, looking back on it, I don't remember stuff because it was like processing,
yeah,
constantly processing.
Well, speaking of chapters, the next chapter of that was the life in NXT. Now, is it true that you found out there and then when Triple H walked out with that contract?
Yep, everything you saw was just raw and sick. Oh, wow. I'd call it nauseating, to be honest.
Yeah, probably sick in a different way.
Oh my god, it was nice. And I think it was, looking back on it, like I think the world just needed a moment to see a moment like that. I don't, you know, like our job as, you know, WWE NXT superstars is to put smiles on faces. That's the company motto. But like, I think in that time, I don't think you'd seen anything positive on a television screen like that in a long time, where, you know, In all of what's been going on in the world, there was like a minor success story out of it all. So it was, you know, looking back on it, was kind of nice. Being that person at that time, I thought, well, that was it. I'm absolutely drained. I think you can see it on my face. I'm just drained. I was so beaten up, like match after match after match. I just picked up a niggle of something, like just a niggle, whether it be, I had tendonitis in both my forearms, and I'd do this vault from out the corner. And having tendonitis in one arm's bad, but at the start of the year, I was lifting really heavy, probably more so than my body frame should do. And my forearms were just like, I can imagine an old age pensioner having like arthritis or something, but it was chronic. So this was hurting me. Then I had a pain in my rotator cuff. Then one of the arms I'd hyperextended landing funny with Kushida because it bent my arm back funny. I just felt by the last one put together with like masking tape and stickers. I literally felt like I was taping myself up going out, but I tried not to tell anybody that, but like I was, yeah. I was like, let's just go. It was just one, and everybody that does our job, like, there's always the ones that like go on about, and they're so hurt, but every one of us are hurting, every one of us all the time. So no one's pain is any different or worse than anybody else's. It's just that our job is to go out there and do it. And that was my goal. That was my job. I knew what I had to do, and I had to do the best job possible. So.
No, amazing. Thank you for that. So that was just a little smidge of the chat I had with Drake Maverick. If you want to get more to it, go to our YouTube channel, Sporth Wrestling. And if you just want to listen to the podcast, just go to podcast channels and the full interview will be up there now. Finally, to end today's show, gentlemen, we normally finish with retro recap and we are still doing that, but I thought we'd break it up a little bit differently because Chris isn't here, and it's like, you know, when the teacher's away and we've got the step teacher in. So we'll have a little bit more fun. I've wheeled in the television from outside, popped a VHS in, and it's Christian versus Randy Orton on the network timeline, which essentially is 40 minutes of just going back through that amazing feud, which I think, I mean, your hardcore elite 1%ers will remember everything, which obviously all three of us are. But Elliot, I'll start with you because we've sat down and watched it. And what a bloody good rivalry.
It is one of the most underrated rivalries, I would say, over the past decade. Christian doesn't get enough credit in this, the way that his character kind of meanders from being heel and face throughout the whole thing. The fact that Randy kind of comes in as a big baby face, which is odd to me, but kind of leaves as a bit of a tweener come by the end of it. The fact that there's so many twists and turns, it's like watching a M. Night Shyamalan movie, but it's actually good. It's really enthralling. It doesn't stop dragging you from one side to the other, knowing where it's going to go. It went on for, what, about 4 or 5 months, the feud? But it almost felt like, though, it was a condensed year-long rivalry centered around the World Heavyweight title. But the belt never felt diminished, despite all of the handovers of the belts, the little tricks here and there, the little winks and nods to, you know, the powers that be and the people behind the scenes throughout the feud as well. It all just encapsulated this really interesting storyline that I kind of wish WWE would do a little bit more of.
Yeah, and Chris, it was brilliant as well, because I'd forgot, obviously, Christian won it in an emotionally charged match with Edge, and then 5 days later, he lost it on SmackDown, and even watching Timeline, I was like, oh, they've done that to him, and that's the end. But then, obviously, you get to Money in the Bank, spits on Orton, and then wins it in one of the most dastardly heel ways possible.
Yeah, obviously, we spoke about that on episode 2, I think it was, when we were looking back at Money in the Bank pay-per-view, and it was the part of the stipulation, wasn't it, that if Orton got disqualified, Christian would win the belt. So obviously he was working on him, and then that was the moment. That was the moment he switched from the spit. I mean, yeah, I think anyone would do the same thing if someone spat on them. And then,
especially
of course,
during these times.
Yeah, especially during these times. And then it obviously got RKO'd through the announce table too.
Yeah, and I think what's great about that is, you know, with them stipulations, they're often put in place, and you know, they always flirt with it, but you never actually see the change happen. And for it to, you know, finally be the way that Christian wins it, I mean, some people could argue it's absolute bullshit, but for that storyline, Elliot, it worked perfectly, didn't it?
Oh, it really did. I mean, it's one of the few things I remembered about that feud. Until I went and watched Timeline, I'd forgotten the whole element. I know that Edge had retired and basically Christian ended up as world champion. I remembered that stipulation. And if you just look at it from just that specific stipulation for that specific match, yes, you could maybe say it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit silly. But in the context of the whole storyline, the fact that this is a bloke who's like convinced, I can beat you, I am a worthy world champion, I've worked my whole life for this. And the fact that he's willing to go, you know what, I've been screwed out of this from the very beginning since I won the title. I'm willing to do anything to show I am the best ever. I quite like that. It's a really subtle heel turn. It's not him going around and like hitting him over the steel chair or low blowing when the referee isn't looking. It's him basically going, I don't care. I want to be champion. I've worked far too hard for this. It's simple. It's elegant. It works so well and makes you look at the storyline from different angles as you're going through it. Because of that one stipulation, I would say, that's probably the mark that turned it from a decent rivalry into a great one.
And one of the hallmarks of the rivalry, Crush, and one of the quotes that sticks with it is Christian saying, one more match. And obviously this year, with everything that's been going on, we alluded to it earlier with the Legend Killer, there has been sort of one more match. I mean, it's not the greatest. Obviously, there's sort of always been rumours in the background because Christian never had, you know, that sort of clean retirement, I'm out, I'm done. But would it be one more match that you would like to see if done properly?
Potentially, yeah, but I'd probably more want to see Christian versus Edge one last time.
Wow. Yeah.
That'd be ridiculous.
That's got the, that's what I call the Rhea Ripley pop there from me and Elliot there, where it's just a, no, great show. If you haven't checked it out already, make sure you get yourself on the WWE Network, WWE Timeline, Randy Orton versus Christian, a fantastic rivalry. Gents, next week, I think maybe a little bit of homework for us. There's a WWE Timeline right now about how The Rock joined the Nation and sort of turned him from a blue chipper into the mega superstar that we saw now. So should we have a watch of that and catch up next week on it?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Right, thank you very much, everybody. Crush, Elliot, fantastic show again. We've booked the future of Evolution. We've caught up on the week's news. I had a chat with Drake Maverick, and we found a bloody good show on the WWE Network. Let us know who you'd want to book in Evolution. We've had some fantastic shouts you may agree or disagree with, but let us know in the comments down below. Make sure you subscribe to us on wherever you get your podcasts. And if you are on Apple, make sure you drop us a 5-star review. Give us a rating, because it does help us out immensely. We've also teamed up with Euroshop. We've got a fantastic prize bundle, and you can get entered into that by just dropping the 5-star review, like I said, and following Go Home Show Podcast on Twitter. Just a little heads up, there's a mini Brahma ball belt in there, some fantastic t-shirts, and all you got to do is drop a 5-star review. It's very easy. Thank you very much for listening, and don't forget to check the full Drake Maverick interview is out now. We'll be back next week for a full Fatal 4-Way. Gentlemen, I'll see you next week. Let's go home.